Clubhouse.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Beacon 23 Recap. Before we begin, we want to give a shout out to our sponsors over at Boat Rocker. They're the awesome folks behind Beacon 23, as well as the much anticipated new series, Orphan Black Echoes.
Oh man, Orphan Black was the bomb. So I really can't wait to watch Orphan Black Echoes, actually.
And in case you're totally interested in tuning into Orphan Black Echoes, I'm going to give you a quick premise of what to expect. First of all, set in the year 2052, a whole 37 years after the original series wrapped up, Echoes takes us into the lives of the now adult Kira and her wife. The two leading ladies include Kristen Ritter, who is Marvel's Jessica Jones, and Keeley Hawes from Bodyguard. Together, they set off on a mission to help a girl with amnesia piece her life back together. And I hear it's a wild ride, team.
Cool. When and where can we watch it?
I'm glad you asked. Orphan Black Echoes premieres Sunday, June 23rd on AMC, AMC Plus, and BBC America.
I can't wait to see the next chapter of the Orphan Black universe.
Welcome back to Pod Clubhouse's continuing coverage of Beacon 23. This is Paul, back with my co-hosts, Gabby and Inez. How are you guys doing this week?
Drier than you, Paul.
Probably so. It's been a tough couple of days here in Houston, but we'll get through it.
Yeah, it's actually, so here in Ohio, we get your scraps. So I've been a little wet. It's a little wet over here, Inez. Thanks, desert
are guys,
lady.
Are you guys getting any of the tornado action that is happening through the actual Midwest?
Yeah, not yet, but we do get that sometimes. But so far, so good.
So far, so good. Well, that's good, because it's really beating the shit out of, like, Kansas, Nebraska, places like that.
The real Midwest.
Right.
Okay. The losers without lakes, you mean? Yeah,
Whoa, careful, careful. There's a long line of dailies live in Nebraska and Iowa.
Oh, yeah, no. Nebraska's fun. It's, what is it called?
It's like a time machine.
The good life. The good life.
That's right. That's really obscure.
No, it's not.
Gabby's ahead, Inez.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. You don't need to. I'm just kidding. It's just the Midwest. It's the state mantra is the good life. Nebraska.
Well, I want to get out of the random middle of the country states that nobody likes to visit, and I want to get back into space.
That is why we're here, and why anyone that's still listening is still here. So, this one was called Song of Sorrow, and after this quick recap, we'll get on with the show. Previously on Beacon 23, Iris and Halen welcome a pilotless mystery airship only to find an unknown matter in the pilot seat. With Iris's curiosity getting the better of her, she touches the matter, releasing a gas that chases she and Halen back into the beacon. We also learn that Beacon Keeper 174, aka Iris's pen pal, allegedly has gone missing en route to Beacon 23. Meanwhile, Harmony encounters a new dilemma of her own. Rogue AI, also known as Dev, has followed her into Beacon 23 with the intention of imprinting on a human of its own. This unforeseen circumstance heightens the tension in an already volatile situation, challenging Harmony to manage the AI's threat while untangling the enigma of the missing pilot. Okay, first impressions for me. I liked how this episode worked better than the last episode for one simple reason. I could understand everything that happened. And that gives it a leg up for me. And in fact, we got some of the explanations we needed from last week in this week's episode. Now, you can still kind of twist and turn them whether or not Iris was correct with what she was positing. But I'm just going to take them and run with them. What did you guys feel? Just gut instinct on this episode.
What was she positing?
The pocket universe and the rumpled space-time.
I liked that. I loved her explanation. That was super fun. Kind of first impression was these visitors. They reminded me of like a cross between Ferengi / Mandalorians. And so that was kind of weird until the end. I just accepted of them and I am completely on board for whatever this little gang has going on.
Ferengi and Mandalorians.
Because they're like searching for scraps, and that's like the Ferengi, and then the Mandalorian because they're all like chanting and culty.
And, yeah. All right. I would have given you more like Ugnaughts, you know, like the little pig guys that work on Cloud City and was in the first season of The Mandalorian. Remember he said, he would say,
oh my gosh, they were so cool.
I have spoken. That guy, he was.
No, they're too cool. Too cool.
Okay.
These guys were not as cool as them. They're Mandalorian, Paul.
There's a show I watched with my daughter when she was little called Dino Trucks. And they're the bad guy dinosaurs are all about scrapping. They are raptors. They're the raptors that scrap metal from other dinos, and then there's the scrapodactyls, you know, that are out there. So that is where my mind went. I was like, okay, we've got some scrappers, and they were, you know, obviously
scrappy.
They're very resourceful. You know, they were resourceful. They survived a major catastrophe and scrapped together a space sail ship.
I was trying to picture how the sail ship worked. I was thinking, like, you remember in Attack of the Clones, the ship that Count Dooku left in? It deployed this big solar sail. And allegedly, that's to catch photons, like, you know, that kind of theoretical particle of light that is and isn't an actual particle. But I guess in Star Wars, it is a particle with enough weight that it can push a sail. And that's how that works. But the part where it was like an open boat kind of confused me. I was picturing like Thor's boat in Love and Thunder. Like, it was just like a boat, like, without a ceiling. Is that what we are getting from this? Because we never actually saw them on the boat. How did you guys understand this craft?
Oh, no, I didn't think. I thought it was somewhat like a pod, just an enclosed. I thought it was more something that you would see with our, you know, space missions. Where, yeah, but it's they kind had of like a pod.
Space suits and like a mast and a guy getting knocked off board.
A pod with a mast.
It could be, I don't know, it could be something, you know, there's always like an output on any kind of machinery out there. So I guess I assumed that whatever was coming out of the exhaust was just blowing into that and giving it the forward momentum that it needed.
Space magic.
Yeah, they're resourceful. They know. You don't need to know. It's a need to know basis, Paul.
People do need to know. And so this is what I'm coming up with, because I need to know.
some amount of time into the future, you know, if you spread humans around like seeds in the wind, like apparently we have in these colonies, cultures, you kind of have to extrapolate, like, where do they start, and then give them 1,000 years and see where they wind up. And so you wind up with something like them in this case, where their primary source of I don't know if it's income or just sustenance is the ship breaking. Makes you wonder how they come up with the sign language and the combination of things. You do kind of understand how they might wind up with like this sense of unity, this clan type mentality. But the rest of it was a question mark for me. I'm interested to learn more about.
I do have one question, though. Halen told Iris that she was talking out of both sides of her mouth. What does that mean?
She was sympathizing with them and saying that they had no right to act that the way that they were at the same time. In the same argument, she was arguing both sides.
Yeah, but that's a saying? You're talking out of both sides of your mouth? I've never heard that.
I mean, I've heard both sides of your... I don't know. I've heard it in like coming out of your ass.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, it's similar.
Out of both holes, both mouths, but not both sides of your mouth. I was like,
maybe it's like a two-faced thing, you know? So like, if you're two-faced, then technically you would have two mouths.
True. You're right. Thank you for educating me. Okay, yeah. that was my only question, really.
Yeah. Maybe they needed to put it more in younger terms, like no cap or whatever.
No, maybe that is too young for me.
So how do we want to like run through this episode? Do we want to do it kind of just like from start to finish?
Yeah, our big question was, who is this guy that came through the goo? And we get that answer right away, right?
Dosto.
Yeah. Dosto, yeah.
Dosto. And, you know, Paul and I got to speak with Ellen Wong, who plays B67/Iris, and she confirmed Portal, specifically Portal. So just throwing that out there. We suspected Portal and we got our answer.
Yeah, I appreciated the explanation. But going along with this episode, I think it'd be kind of cool to just kind of go through the concepts because there was a lot going on. So for me, I think we should jump into like the theories or the storylines. Okay. I think that would be fun.
All right, hit it.
Okay, so there's a few storylines, right? We have the AI situation going on between Harmony and Dev, and then we have this new crew and whatever's going on with them and how it ends up. And then finally, you have the dynamic between Iris and Halen. And so I guess, can we start by talking about Halen and Iris's dynamic?
I think you've identified something offline that we can expand on. It's relating to neither one of them seems to be leadership material. They're both kind of taking things as they come or thinking about things in terms of like, how can I fix this beacon? How can I make my little ship?
Like short-sighted, right?
Yeah, reactive even.
Yeah, there's no leaders amongst the group between Harmony, Iris and Halen. We've seen them all take a step forward and do some kind of initiation, and then they keep taking their step back out, and then they end up kind of like to the side.
Like everyone's going in a different, like, lateral steps in different directions, and there's no unity there, and it's an interesting take, I think, so far.
Well, not that much chronological time has elapsed for them that we know of. When things calm down on the beacon from the snowy time to when Dosto's portal manifested and spat him out, that's what, like a day total that they've known each other?
Yeah.
That's not a lot.
I definitely don't get a sense that it's been longer than a day between Dosto coming through and then them guiding the sailboat through the fold.
The way that Iris was so welcoming of the, I don't know if they're Subarans or Sibarans, Sibarans, but something like that. Sibarans, I'll just put like an apostrophe there.
Yeah, I thought it was that one, Sibaran.
The way she welcomed them was like, I mean, maybe I've just seen way too many more military type science fiction where there's not like this big open door policy for people that just use a plasma torch on the side of your ship to let themselves in. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, oh, we'll just find some sleeping arrangements for everyone. What? So I was just thinking, well, I mean, we know that she's lonelier than she wanted to actually admit to herself. So perhaps this is like a reflex for her to be overly welcoming because she finally has a chance to see some new people.
I mean, I guess another theory could be that because she was theorizing this wormhole thing and then it proved immediately that this was what was going on, maybe it gives her some kind of hope or curiosities about B-174.
Yeah, she's oddly like idealistic too, especially for wanting to move up in ranks within this system. So she's part of ISA and she hates QTA, right?
Distrust because of Olive, yes.
So I understand her like believing in ISA and following in suit that in that regard, but like all of her hate and frustration and wanting to go up in the ranks in order to combat or change things and kind of combat QTA. I feel like she needs more leadership skills. She needs more like logic and tactical
more like command
approach.
I think like more command to her presence. She's the smallest one out of everybody there too.
I mean, I'm mostly interested in how it's going to play out. It does leave a bunch of questions with the character development, but so far in each episode, we have been seeing kind of a different side to everybody, except for Halen. Halen still seems like he's kind of sad about Aster. And Harmony is pretty,
I think
pretty
she's maxed
with
out
the other AI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a new feel, but I am curious on where it's going to go. And we have an introduction of other characters. So I was actually really happy with the end. I liked the twist. I didn't look at the title. I didn't pay attention to it. So I'm glad I didn't, because that was a really fun twist for me at the end, which I totally would have like expected if I saw the title.
You mean the knocking them out as the twist? I mean, there was nothing to trust.
Yeah, like the song.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so the song, the non-Sabarans were not drugged. They were knocked out by the power of song?
Yeah, like frequency.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay. Because it was...
this is an interesting group.
I think that's more space magic. We might have to just accept the power of song driving you so emotionally wild that you just pass out.
I don't think it was like emotional.
I mean, they were crying and freaking out.
It did make them cry. I know like that, but I don't
know. It was like a hypnosis sort of thing.
It was hypnosis, but I felt like the soundtrack had like a high tones and stuff. That's the science that I need in order to accept the space magic.
Well, I just thought that they're these people who've been scavengers for a little while. They're metallic-y in the face. So maybe there is some kind of like evolution or witchcraft or way that they have or that they go. Yeah. Maybe there's some kind of powder or something, you know, that they can put out there that someone who isn't used to like being around all this metal might be sensitive to.
Yeah, they live out there in this other galaxy. So who knows like what are all of the elements that exist there that have allowed their evolution to have occurred. Yeah, for sure.
I called them aliens. Like in my notes, I just called them.
Oh, you don't think
aliens.
They're human?
They're magical. No, I do, but I think that there's something. I mean, it did remind me of like Star Wars universe or something. And so I did just kind of in my mind just categorize them as like some kind of subhuman group clan that has something else going on that they'll reveal to me.
Have you ever watched or read The Expanse?
No.
All right. Well, The Expanse is another sci-fi series that is closer to what they call hard sci-fi, which Inez would eat up, in that the science presented there is meant to be super plausible, harder to...
Star Trek?
No, dog.
Like popular mechanics like on that. Screen?
Yeah, like that. And so
there
are... part of the conflict in that series comes from people that have been living in space so long that they and their descendants are evolving differently than people that have lived, well, I guess it's on Earth, the moon, Mars, whatever. And so if you've spent, and your parents and your grandparents have all spent all this time in space, then they're presupposing that like your bones will be longer but weaker, and if you were subject to gravity that you couldn't take it, you couldn't stand, but you are kind of lankier and you are more suited to the kinds of terrain that you might experience in space and need to like grab onto handholds because you're longer and can handle that kind of thing. So, but that's just an example that I toss out as like, once you separate long enough from whatever the original colony was, then you do start to get those unique traits that make survivability increase with your descendants.
And that happens here on Earth, so that's something that I just expected was going on with them.
But I figured that the face paint, like the blue lips and the Mad Max silver paint across the face, I figured that was more tribal or something like that. Less evolutionary, more cosmetic. Were you reading that as like, no, that guy has a silver nose?
I'm open to both. At first, I thought it was cosmetic. I think it is cosmetic to an extent, but also, you know, that there was one character who had a missing limb and he was all black, and that just reminded me of like a coal miner or something. And so to me, it's not that it's like tribal just for cosmetic purposes, but it was it's kind of their position or ranking and whatever their life is like before they got to where we are.
That's really interesting casting for that guy, because you can imagine like they live in a very dangerous area. It's very plausible you would lose parts in this existence.
Yeah, I liked that. And their costume, right? Very Mandalorian-esque, where they like pick up scraps and make their uniform.
They
and
were like related, wrap, but not identical.
I felt like that was bubble wrapped on her sleeves.
It happens. It definitely happens. When you watch behind the scenes on how different things get made in sci-fi shows, and it really takes the mystique away.
I thought it was supposed to be.
Could be.
I mean, it was good insulation, so
the thing I'm thinking of was like James Cameron was like a set person on like a very low budget sci-fi movie before he became a director. And in order to make like this science fiction-y corridor, he got fast food containers that were like styrofoam and stapled them to like this hexagonal wall and just did it for the whole course of the corridor of the hallway. So it had like these bumps and ridges and things, and he just spray painted the whole thing like red or something. And on camera, mm-hmm. it reads as science mm-hmm. fiction. But if you flip it over, it's just McDonald's, you know?
Yeah, that's film school for you.
Could be bubble wrap with some texture or just different layers of netting. Because they all looked related, their suits, their helmets and things, but they'd all been either personalized.
Customized.
Right, for whatever their particular needs were.
You know, speaking of uniforms, clothing did catch my eye in this episode for whatever
yes,
reason.
Yes, irises.
Yeah, I wrote down wearing a dress, and I don't know yeah. why that stood out to me, probably because it felt like you're still kind of in the middle of a mission mode, especially now that you've got people over. So like it felt
people
interesting
over.
how like casual.
I know you're hosting, well, but be professional, lady.
I mean, like, I don't know if it was meant to like make it like a vibe. Is this like her just trying to create a vibe and make people like comfortable, whatever, or she just like run out of clothes and not do laundry and she didn't have her uniform available to her? It just felt like it just got a sense that people tend to, except for Sophie, that they tend to wear their uniform all the time, and when they do wear casual wear, it's like for themselves in their privacy. So mm-hmm. Seeing her out there like having this, especially when she is so continuously like on them and side-eyeing them about, like, you know, messing up her beacon because she's got a lot of loyalty to the beacon mission, right? So it was just interesting seeing her in the dress. And then also I noticed Harmony was wearing very comfy clothes. And I was like, I really...
But stylish. It was like
really
an asymmetrical cowl neck thing.
But then I went back and looked at like season one, and she's all, you know, she's got the uniform of like this leathery like clothing.
She's not part of them anymore. That's why her uniform changed. Like what she's wearing is what they put her in when she was in that purgatory, and then she left there, so she's not getting any updates. So I think she's just like stuck in whatever this is.
It's just like the Sims when they start over, then their clothing is all basic.
Yeah, this is her basic.
I liked
yeah.
it,
and I think
it was comfy.
Yeah, and I think that with Iris, I wrote that down too. I noted that I thought it was weird. I thought the same thing, except I think that maybe, you know, she is really into her culture, her peace, and she does still like do her meditation. And so I was thinking that this is just something that is, you know, for herself, that works for her. This isn't her beacon. You know, they're kind of lost, like they're not working right now. I don't think Halen has clothes. So maybe like not a lot of clothes fit him, but she packed to get here. She brought her clarinet. Like I think she's like trying to just, she's just wearing the clothes that she brought over, and it's just kind of suiting her, whatever they want her personality to like exude.
She was packing for an emergency.
But she brought her clarinet.
That's true.
So, you know, her culture and Zen and her vibe is very important to her.
I mean, Ellen did say that she's very like grounded in her traditions, and that is like what helps her and what she really leans into. So I guess like the discipline of like, no matter where I'm going, I'm always going to bring these things, and a dress is included in that.
Speaking of that, the new guy, was he wearing a robe when he came through, or I think they dressed him in a robe?
Yes.
But that was a really nice robe. It was like silver and all sorts of little designs.
It looked like a kimono or something, but that's not quite right. But yeah, because he was, I think his clothes were covered in space magic goo.
Mm-hmm. So it must have been hers.
It didn't look like Halen's. It would be funny if it was.
Oh my God. I'm now picturing Halen in that robe.
Oh man.
Thanks, Paul.
He's a little too, too fit. Anyway, yeah, so the clothes did stand out, so that's fun. And that was a pretty tattoo that he had.
Maybe it was also to kind of just give a clearer contrast between the guests' Mad Max style clothing, you know, and maybe it's just meant to kind of give us that tone and feeling of the contrast. I don't know, maybe having them stand out a little bit more.
Okay, maybe, even though they do a pretty good job with the helmet with like the
and the worms
sticking out of it. That was my favorite. The like predator helmet.
Yeah.
I liked that.
That seems like a hazard, right? Having all that shit hanging down off you. No.
They got to personalize their costumes, okay?
I mean, that makes sense to you. You're fucking working your ass off, like, in the hardcore stuff that they're doing, and this is kind of like your everyday thing. You're going to personalize your things with what you've got and match it to yourself. That all of that made sense to me.
About Iris, and she was talking to, who was it, B331? Right, she was speaking to him. Was that the first time that she had spoken to him, auditory, or was it, like, was it always email? You know, because she didn't know if it was a boy before, but then...
Well, this is different. I thought he said A331, and I don't know what that would be.
Oh, I wrote B331.
But it did sound...
I mean, that's what you wrote, but...
It did sound like they knew each other's voices, didn't it?
It sounded like they knew who each other were, so...
Yeah, maybe not voices, but some level of familiarity, right?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing over there?
Beacon 23, this is A331. Please stay off the sub-channels. You know they're not official.
331, it's me, 67.
B67? What are you doing all the way over there?
It's a long story.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, thanks. You're sweet.
Oh, yeah. And then so that was kind of interesting and very obvious and not so subtle, like foreshadowing where she looks suspicious about why he would know that or that he thought that B-23 was destroyed. Did you catch that?
Right. Yeah.
Is B-23 back online? I thought it had been destroyed.
And she looks suspicious and then immediately moves on.
Well, they're helping us forget what you guys pointed out about the last, not the last episode, but the episode before that, I guess, was 174 saying, look out the window. And that's when the explosion happened. I'm sure why I brought that up, except just to keep that in the mind of the listener, that this person identifying as 174 is still unaccounted for and had foreknowledge of the explosion. That could have been the speed of light, could have been something else.
Keeping tabs, right.
Exactly. Okay. So 331 is someone else that knew about Sabara, knew about Beacon 23 being destroyed.
What's going on in the Sabaran system?
You didn't hear.
I've been out of touch.
Sabara's gone.
What do you mean, gone? That system's 180 planets, 11 inhabited.
And it's gone. The last column holdouts were eliminated.
Or had been informed about that, and then thought to call back later. Were we to understand that the Sabarans and Dasto have trackers in their blood?
They have tracker biotes in their blood. If any cross your space, let them go. You take them in and you'll have a very angry AI on your doorstep. You hear me? Be careful.
I hear you.
So welcoming that crew onto your beacon is a great way to have the military or Olive show up and say, I'm going to kick your asses now.
I know. I hope he does make another appearance.
Oh, I'm sure he will.
Or do you think it's not true? Because nobody seemed to care about that fact.
Well, I cared enough to write it down, so I'm expecting Olive to show up and kick their ass.
We care, but I mean, who knew that, right?
No, Iris.
Is Halen aware of it? Iris knows that. Oh, it seemed like she didn't believe it, though.
That's true. And then there was no time because the Sabarans showed up, and it was kind of like mayhem after that.
You know, I was surprised that Halen didn't have more of an aggressive approach with these newcomers because of what we've seen him do outnumbered in season one. So why do you think that he didn't charge up his stuff and like put his suit or, you know, charge himself up and go after them? Why would he not do that this time around, but he did it the first time around? What do you think?
They've shown that to us once in sort of like the Chekhov's gun sort of way. And so story-wise, I think they're going to reserve that for some time when he really needs it, even though it seems like he really could have used it this time around. But I think they're not going to make that a crutch that he can just turn on anytime he wants. But I had the same thought, Inez, just like...
The logical thought?
You're getting sort of invaded here.
So I think it's because he's... You know, he's feeling really guilty about he's getting his memory back. So in the first season, he had no idea what was going on, didn't know why he was there. He's been through a lot. His best friend is gone, Aster. No, I'm not talking about Bart, guys. I know you guys miss him. I'm just kidding. But I think in this season, he's feeling a lot of guilt. He's getting his memory back. And, you know, this group of people, like, they're lost. They came through a wormhole, or they don't call it a wormhole. They call it...
A pocket universe.
The fold created a pocket universe. And so I think he's just in the mindset of, like, these are maybe my kin, like, just kind of lost people in space. And so maybe he's gravitating toward, like, helping them and giving them the benefit of the doubt because they are fellow pirate refugees.
Okay. Well, and...
So, yeah, maybe that's why he's sad.
And the magic power-up box is not like a microwave. It takes a while. It's more like an oven. It takes a while to heat up before it's actually useful.
I mean, it seemed like they were separated for like enough time that he could have like been like, you know what, I'm just going to like go nap and then like go charge himself up for a while.
Definitely plausible in the long period of time before dinner, you mean?
We're living in the present.
I'm tired of you saying this.
Well, I'm tired of you saying that. But oh no, Ellen Wong really looked in her element. I liked seeing her as Iris.
Well, I really like seeing her in B67 mode during all this. Like every time that she'd come across them, like destroying stuff, like that glare that she would just give them. Because I was just, it just was kind of like an endearing moment because she's like this young, new thing. And so it's just like these little reminders like of who she is, which is like an aspiring leadership role, beacon keeper. And here she's got like no control. She's just like, how dare they, you know? And so that was like cute moments of those green little reminders. Yeah. She didn't make them her sourdough though. That seemed like she like did it for Halen, but she's like, not for these people.
So it was interesting how they both split, right? I mean, were you guys surprised that Halen sided with the new guy?
Dosto.
With the Dosto kimono? Dosto, yes. Were you surprised that Halen immediately believed him? And that she chose their side. I thought it was weird how he was kind of aggressive and skeptical. And then boom, is just like, okay, cool. Yeah, 100%. I believe you.
Well, you
I mean, it's like what you said, Gabby, you know, like the the history and being at the mercy of this stuff. And then he's like, you know, he just showed up from this goo that was in.
You're right.
Well, Dosto appealed to him in terms that he would understand about doing things that you have to do, even though it's a bad situation and having to live with it afterwards and all that. But the trouble was that he'd already been caught lying. And so you couldn't really suss out when the lying stopped.
Yeah, but Halen lied also to Aster when they first showed up and it was survival.
And Aster lied to him.
Everybody
lies. But, okay, so question, Harmony, can she not scan people anymore and know their life story and profile? Because she did that a lot before, and now she's kind of...
Do you think she has the access to all of that stuff still? Like, maybe her separation from Olive kept her kind of, like, more isolated, limited information on the beacon.
Oh, like she's a closed system now? She can't go tap the whatever the internet evolves into?
Yeah, it sounds like that's what she's saying, which sucks if that's the case.
That's what I'm saying, because like, Gabby, you know, you're right. I expected more participation on those kinds of things. Those were those enticing pieces about her and the whole dynamic of the AIs in season one. So now that we know she's gone through something, I'm just going to attach it as a consequence of that.
Yeah, but if she was truly like air-gapped, like they say, then Dev couldn't have invaded, I don't think.
Well, Dev was also like...
Dev was left behind as part of that judgment program, that purgatory episode. But the part where Dev is on the run from Olive, I have trouble reconciling exactly how that all works. Dev is a fact. Dev is there. So I guess maybe that's enough.
Yeah, time will tell, I think.
And we weren't really sure if Dev was there as like the lingeringness of the prison purgatory thing on Beacon System, and not that Dev returned through like the ship from, I don't know, 174 ship that made it there or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were very sus about the timing, about how Dev and the...
Dev showed up with the portal at the same time as the portal thing showed up.
Pretty much, yeah. And that's just
but
weird
timing. But we
don't
know the distinction. Okay.
I can't wait to find out, though. I think there will be some explanation.
Well, yeah, I think we're only halfway through.
With Dev and that weird wooing stuff Dev was up to with whomever.
Poor Dev, so desperate for some companionship.
It made me wonder if when an AI is not paired, is that just what they do?
I don't think all of them do that, but I think that Dev would, because they're evolved like Harmony and no one else is evolved.
But I get it that Dev is evolved. They've said that. It's a stated fact, right? Dev and Harmony are evolved AIs.
They can feel emotions. Yes.
Okay. So what is up with this sexual approach that Dev seems to be taking in order to imprint on a human? Like, Dev is evolved, so is there something that I don't know about?
I think it's about weaknesses. I think it's about like just human nature. That
because of the loneliness.
Usually an effective strategy. Yeah. Companionship, like Dev wants companionship and maybe doesn't know like how to go about wooing someone. And then humans, we've already seen
Iris
that
wants companionship.
Iris, yeah, that's a weakness that I think everyone is aware of, that she gets too attached. So yeah, okay. I just think it's kind of pinpointing at weaknesses. And this is an AI that's been super isolated, like has never been utilized for the purpose that it thinks it's supposed to be utilized for. And so I think that Dev just doesn't really know how to go about shit, and it's kind of like coming off
just
a little
testing.
Strong
just troubleshooting.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
poking,
that's what I
poking the fence to see where's the loose board to get through.
Like a little velociraptor.
Well, loneliness is a strong thread in this whole series, the solo nature of people. But when they find somebody, even though they're telling themselves that they're better off as loners, maybe it's not 100% true. And this is an AI version of an idea akin to that.
Mm. Well, didn't Dev say that they were highly selective?
Yes, that that was said. I don't know that that's true
that's what
or
they
not.
Said, yeah, they're just saying that to be a dick to Harmony.
Sounds like
but...
bullshit to me, but.
Yeah, definitely just want anything, any flesh they can find. So, are they going to try to attach themselves to one of these noobs? Huh? Maybe? Maybe Predator
can
helmet?
They attach themselves to?
Well, you know, there's some narrative good that Dev might be able to have, because Dev has this weird ability to manipulate reality, the physical reality, and our heroes are left at the end of the episode in some amount of trouble. Personally, I don't think they're in that much trouble. I think they're just being kept out of the way while the Sabarans deal with Dosto.
So you think that they'll, like, they're kind of have, like, a level of honor and will release them once they get rid of Dosto, and they're like, all right, sorry we had to do that, but you're getting in the way.
I kind of do, yeah. I mean, so even though they've been lying this whole episode over and over again. But
I mean, they pulled a Jigglypuff move.
I think that they are not going to be like so nice about like all of that. I think that they're going to try to figure out like, can I move this beacon? Can I like, how do we like fix this ship that is attached and just not working right now? They're probably going to try to like fix that. But I think that they're not going to make it anywhere. I think Olive's going to come back. That's what I want. I want Olive to come back because he's tracking their blood, right? And then mm-hmm. we saw that one guy found the blue rock and pocketed it. Mm-hmm. And I think, Paul, you've mentioned before, like theorizing that this blue rock being like a known thing out there is something that Olive is actively looking for because of the blast, and he's trying to collect them all. So I don't know, so I don't think he's coming back for that rock, and he's coming back because he already has the tracker and all their blood. He knows exactly where they are.
Or it's what Paul said, and they and you, where they scrap up, they take off, they take the rock, they have the tracker and their blood, and then Olive, we just hear about what happens later on. You know, we hear about Olive catching up to them and blah blah blah, because if Olive goes to the beacon and knows that everyone's there and alive, he's gonna just kill them. So I think that these people, this yes. clan needs to leave. Olive needs to follow them. And then that way Harmony and Dev and Halen like are alive and well.
Here's a twist on that. Okay. What if Dev thinks that Dev can use this situation to Dev's advantage?
Oh my gosh. Yay. I hope that happens. I would like that.
Contacts Olive and says, hey.
No way.
Some folks you're looking for are here. What do you think?
And then what? Bargain with him for something?
If Dev is on the run for some failure or other reason, then maybe there's a way to get back into Olive's good graces, get back into the main system. Because are you just waiting for these cast-off humans to show up at Beacon 23 to imprint on? Because you're going to get a pretty slim pool of people. You know?
Yeah, there has to be a bigger agenda, you're saying.
Whereas if you're back in the QTA pool, then maybe you'll get a shot at a better match.
I don't think so. I don't think that they're interested in the QTA. Well, no, you're right. Maybe so. I think that maybe it's not even about the journey and longevity. It's just like an experiment, maybe, because it's totally likely that Dev decides to imprint and then thinks this is stupid, but I did it, so let me move on or something.
That's an interesting point, that there's so much stock being put in imprinting. I mean, once you do, though, you're indentured to that person. And so what if they're a Solomon? Is that the existence that this evolved AI wants for themselves, is to be this jackass's slave?
That's a fear, and that's definitely something that could happen. But I don't know. I still think that Dev is super AI rogue. So I think that they can get out of whatever mess that they might get themselves into.
I think last episode was, we saw that there's some kind of connection with this goo membrane stuff from the portal and Dev. Dev was able to get into Iris's head after Iris kind of got sucked in a little bit and touching this portal. And so I've been making an assumption that Dev is connected to this specific portal at some capacity. Not really sure yet how Dosto comes into play with that, but that membrane portal was on the ship originally, right? The seat.
right.
And I'm reflecting also that Harmony spends time looking at the membrane, and it looked like the membrane was surrounding the beacon, right?
I don't know if it's surrounding it, but it was a major presence right near it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks like it's obviously getting bigger. It's now outside, even though it was inside when Dosto came through. And I'm not really sure how they like moved it or how it got moved. Or is it still in the ship on that same spot? Or is that membrane thing out there? Is that the entrance? That's not the entrance of this portal galaxy, right? The fold?
It could be multiple openings that come and go, you know, to the same place. But the what you're bringing up about it needing, or I don't know if it needed to, but the fact that it did arrive in the seat of a ship is pretty weird. With it, even
or adorable.
Okay. Yeah. Or it
did
adorable.
Like a fart noise in Iris's face.
It needed to be activated. No, I think it did that, though, because it wanted to be activated in a specific way so that it could linger in that space. Actually, I don't know if it is part of the fold. I don't think it's part of the fold.
So I'm thinking that it might still be part of Dev. And Gabby, you've described Dev as potentially really like a virus. So I'm just wondering if like Dev's like doing shit inside over here and nobody's paying attention to this membrane going on out there. And what if like that mm-hmm. is like Dev doing that? Dev is intending to like surround this thing for whatever reason. And maybe that's how like sucked up, you know, once B-174 beacon person, you know, into it and is about to do this to Beacon 23. I'm just throwing something really out there. I'm just really trying to figure out the connection of Dev with the goo and how it impacted and connected Dev with Iris. And so translating what that might mean in this episode, especially seeing that the membrane has grown larger the longer that it's been there, and it's been there the same amount of time as Dev's been there.
That's cool. Those are really good theories. I personally I'm an enjoy the ride kind of girl. I just enjoy the beacon. I take it day by day, frame by frame. And so for me, I've just accepted that there are a lot of moving pieces. And I feel like I'm moving forward with each of them. Do I know if they intersect yet? No. But right now they're all in motion. And so that's fun for me.
Oh, man. That's fun for you. Wow. Good for you, Gabby, because I do not function in that
you
kind of way.
You just got to free your mind.
I cannot free my mind. I am in a box. I'm sorry. It's so
songs.
Hard for me. A song of sorrow. I'm going to sing a song of sorrow with
this. You know what? I don't appreciate that you people did not care for my Jigglypuff reference. So I'm going to say it again. They pulled a Jigglypuff. You know, they sang a song. Everyone fell asleep. Jigglypuff is a Pokemon that sings. That's their superpower. They sing and everyone falls asleep. And that's like not scary. That's not crazy. Jigglypuff, of course, gets really mad because like, Jigglypuff is an excellent singer and feels like a star, and it's so rude that everyone falls asleep. So then they actually end up marking up people's faces because Jigglypuff's mad. Anyway, so I don't know if that's what's going to happen here. Maybe they do have like nice decor on their face. That said, though, I don't think that they're going to like be aggressive once they sing their song, their Jigglypuff sound. I think I'm on board with Paul that they're just like, okay, get out of our way. This is one of our superpowers. We're going to do what we need to do. And we don't hate you. We don't have any problems with you. So unless you interfere, we won't kill you.
That's how I think it's going to go down. It's sort of severe that they're tied up in the core of the beacon with the zero gravity and all that. It's dramatic. And
like
it's
that.
Equally dramatic that they're chanting and performing some sort of loud vocalizations and pounding on stuff. But they might be in the middle of their due process or whatever with Dasto when Halen and Iris wake up. And the chanting may not be for them at all.
I get all of that. My question was about the membrane and what you guys think
Where's
about
Harmony
the
in
membrane.
This?
I don't know. She keeps going like in and out with Dev. We saw her looking out at the membrane. Do we still
Yeah, and she can see the membrane, so that's something.
That yeah. Well, that's my notes originally say that she looking at the artifact remnant, but she's not supposed to be able to see that stuff. Then I had to go back and change my notes that it's I mean, I kind of think that the things can be related, the artifact and then the disturbances in the space-time continuum, making access to pocket universes. Those things, I mean, to them to happen in the same local area of space seems pretty highly coincidental to not be connected.
Yeah. You know, because the artifact was together. It was completely formed, and then this explosion happens. So maybe that explosion, maybe these pocket folds or whatever are just like, yeah, remnants of like the artifact. So that's why you have different holes, like portals everywhere, because maybe it wasn't totally destroyed, or maybe it can get itself back together. But I agree. I don't know. I agree that it's connected, and maybe it has evolved so that AI can see it. Or maybe it's like a different strand of artifact that can infect AI psyche and not just human psyche.
But with Harmony in that scene, we know that the Sabarans were scared of that technology. They didn't like her around. And they also used their secret language to decide what front they were going to put up and then tell that version of the story. Like, oh, can we go check on Dasto real quick? We want to see how he's doing. And meanwhile, their true intention is to find him and kill him.
So that sign language, that you don't think that that sign language is like an official language. It's just like amongst these group of people, because or else Harmony would have been able to pick up.
Right. Yeah.
It's their official language.
If you could imagine, like, maybe if they're working in like zero G, right? And maybe they need to communicate over some distance and they're so under-equipped that they don't actually have like radio transmitters. So they use sign to communicate with each other. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
That's their smoke signal, yes. Yeah. You can see it from afar.
But you could imagine maybe these people who know enough about tearing things apart that they might know how to handicap the AI emitters, the hologram emitters.
For sure.
Such that Harmony might not be able to show up because they don't want her around. Mm. They don't trust her.
I think they don't trust her because she's connected to QTA and military and... Yeah, they're rogue, off-the-grid sorts, so that makes sense. But this is the first time that we see any sort of real community, I think. So far, all of the groups, including, like, Halen and Aster, there's always skepticism, there's always lying, betrayal, whatever, someone's pissed off at somebody. But this little clan is the first time, I think, that we've seen one cohesive group that has one mission and seems like they're all on board and allied properly. So that's cool. Yay.
Yeah. And, you know, nobody's entitled to like a specific set of etiquette, you know, like just they were like rough and just like barging in to the beacon the way that they did. But this is like their survival and what they need to do for like themselves and, you know, and Halen and Iris. It kind of seemed like they were trying to they expected like kind of better manners, and that's kind of why they felt like a little bit more entitled about their space or whatever. But it's like remembering that these are people are like literally like fleeing in the complete obliteration of billion people in their galaxy, and they're like all that's kind of left, and so they're kind of allowed to be really rough.
Right. I really wished that someone would be like, all right, cool, kill them. After we're done with them, kill him. But these are new times, and these are a sensitive pair, so I gotta let that go.
So you're saying if you run the beacon, you'd be like, I don't care, whatever, take him. Just don't make me watch.
Yeah, do it.
One less mouth to feed.
Yeah, come on, Aelin. Are you a soldier? Are you a soldier?
Well, there.
That's what I would do.
Some of his story, like, about the actions on the boat where Lino gets tossed overboard and that gets sussed out to be, yes, that's true, is like him or me kind of thing. But that doesn't really explain away the concept that the dude was a mole for the column the whole time, and whether or not Iris and Halen would have any ideological differences with column people, because they have so far. So just the nature of the guy being kind of a rat for being in the column and then showing Olaf the way in would make them, to me, not want to overly concern themselves with this guy.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's in our biological nature as humans to like survive, and seeing and witnessing death and participating in killing like is supposed to be just against our nature and traumatizing. And so maybe it's just kind of feeding into that. It's like, you know what, like enough people have died, we've seen a lot of people die here, and then Iris hasn't been there, but you know, she's experiencing her own loss with B-174, you know, on her way there and then gone. And so maybe it's just kind of like enough, please. Hope. Enough. I don't even know hope. Yeah. I don't even know hope. I think it's just like, I'm so fucking tired of dealing with death and then not getting a break.
That's funny. Well, okay. So I guess now would be a good time to talk more about Dev and Harmony. I know we've touched on them a bit, but that's like the third storyline that was going on. Is there anything else you guys had in mind about those two?
For me, not really. I mean, we got the gist of it that this is like Dev's trying to find a human to imprint on, and Harmony is saying no. And then Dev's saying, you hoard. And then Harmony's saying, no. That's the story.
Selfish bitch.
Yeah, she called Harmony a selfish bitch.
Yeah.
But that's it.
I don't even know what that means in AI world. Harmony has one imprint and she does not trust Dev's motives. So she's actively keeping Dev away from the other people. I think probably hoping to just discourage Dev from staying at all.
Or maybe there's something else we're supposed to get out of this about like who Harmony is now, you know, she's having these like side battles. She's not reporting to anything because she's like free. You know, she's not like, you know, saying, hey, Halen, like this is the latest evolution of stuff. You know, what's going on over here? Like, you know, like maybe that's the angle that we're supposed to take on this, too, is just seeing how different of an AI she is compared to season one.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I don't know. I'm really interested in the next episode because they did set us up. This was like a nice introduction to some new dynamics. And I hope that next episode is going to grow on it. I mean, there was like a total cliffhanger. So they have to be. Everyone has to be in the next episode. But I am curious as to like how long Dev is going to stick around. And I want Dev to ally with somebody because if Dev is so powerful, I want to see, you know, what that actually translates to.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting, especially knowing that like their core piece is dealing with all of these like the sad side of emotions all this time and then being connected. And it would be really interesting to see how they portray that.
Well, I thought I had understood that Harmony's totem physical presence had become the beacon, but I kind of made that up because I hadn't seen the totem that Aster had carried in with her for a long time. So I just sort of made that leap. But then in this episode, Dev mentioned that they had horned in on Harmony's totem, which caused Harmony some distress. So I was wondering if that's the actual beacon or if it's that physical little gadget that Aster had. And if it is the little gadget, then can the Sabarans, if they make their getaway ship, can they take that with them? And take Dev with them. I was just kind of thinking of that as you were describing your last thought, Inez.
Oh, yeah, Dev has a totem? I think I was with you.
Yeah.
Dev said that they... Oh, Dev does have a totem. I just...
Well, that there was plenty of room in Harmony's.
How are you even able to be here?
Your totem. It's very generous.
What did you do?
And that's... I guess, where Dev's program is currently residing. But I couldn't figure out if that meant the gadget or the beacon.
Ooh, maybe it okay. is the beacon, and then Dev is that membrane. So I'm going taking it back there, taking it back. Like, Dev's just, like, distracting everybody or letting them, taking advantage of their distraction, and is going to grab the beacon, and that's the totem.
That's funny that you were circling back to that because I was circling it way back and I'm like, what if Dev becomes the new Bart? New beacon keeper, has plenty of friends to imprint on all of the time. Full-time job forever.
Yeah. Get out of jail free for Harmony because the beacon needs an AI. Wow, I like that idea a lot because I don't really like Dev that much. So having Dev trapped on the beacon, that's fine. That's just fine by me.
Yeah, Dev is like extra powerful too since they can manipulate mechanical things that don't require like a software to do it, right? They're just able to like turn a switch and whatnot. So they're actually better suited for the beacon life than Harmony is.
Dev needs a host, and that host will open the third, fourth, fifth eye of Dev's, and then more magic will happen. So that is what I want to see.
Yeah, right now Dev is just trouble. Troublesome ghost in the machine. Was that the main concepts you wanted to cover, Gabby?
Did we cover everything? I think so. I mean, at the last scene, right? Just wrapping things up, we have the dinner. Everyone has this dinner. What did you guys think about that slow motion laughing, Halen and Iris getting involved? You know, before they actually sat down and had wine, they were just observing these beacon style Mandalorians cooking.
It was lulling.
How do you guys feel about that?
Lulling them into thinking that they were being welcomed into this dinner ceremony is not quite the right word, but it's kind of like that because it seemed quasi-religious, all the stuff that they did.
Like Thanksgiving.
Right.
The pilgrims.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we've seen that they're both craving community. You've mentioned it earlier, Gabby, right? They're just desperate people for community and interaction with other people, and this was the first time that they were going to enjoy some home cooked food, and they've got an entire community there that's not allowed. It's not ever going to be allowed in like normal Beacon life, so it's something that she never would be experiencing on her own anyway. And then I'm sure just like, because you're right, it was very Thanksgiving-y. That's rooted in like tradition. And I know that Iris is very much rooted in like traditional stuff. So that probably just brought her at ease. And like you said, Paul, they kind of just fell into the ruse of the vibe that they needed to happen in order to tiptoe their way toward their objective, which is to get Dosto.
Yeah, that's true. So it was there's a human component that kept sticking us in the face for this episode. And I guess I wasn't expecting that because I'm used to Beacon just being very rigid. So it was a change of pace. And again, I guess it kind of left me interested in what is to come because it is a different vibe for sure. Everybody has a different vibe. It's more relaxed. You just don't feel that. So I guess I'm skeptical. I'm like, why is Iris so comfy? Stop being comfy. Put your hair in a ponytail.
Get that uniform on. I really did like the song too. I closed my eyes a bit just to kind of feel it and see what the vibrations felt like in my body. And I liked the growth of it. And, you know, and then just from like them recording and switching around to taking a look at everybody, you know, it was just like this little ritual kind of thing. And I was getting sus after it was like going on for a little bit longer than I needed to if I'm hungry.
Right.
You know, then I'm like, oh, I think something's happening here. I already knew something was really sus the moment that they said, we really need to bring Dosto out here to enjoy this because this is not right. Like, that was like to me, like a very obvious, like bad idea. But you know what?
That's so funny.
These dummies did it anyway. And because I think they just were so curious because they were so intrigued with what was happening that they're like, fuck it. Let's just see how this plays out. And they just maybe they thought that they were like better prepared physically and mentally in case something did happen. But they didn't know a song was going to take them down.
Of course they didn't know that a song would take them down. But I mean, that's hilarious because I was sus until they were like, you know what, let's just bring them in. And then I was like, oh, maybe they are nice. Like, so they fooled me. Briefly, right? Because right then I was like, wait, what's so funny? What's funny? Why aren't they telling the joke? And then I was like, oh, never mind. They're drugged. They're hypnotized. They're like, something's going on.
I'd say that's very autistic of you, Gabby, because you are kind of like that in general of like, you know, like just looking for like, oh, that's what it was. Like, I just was completely calm. Like, that is such a you thing that we have this conversation. But then on the other end, right, I'm also autistic and I'm like, all of these pieces need to fit in perfectly and they're not matching. This isn't working. And so I'm...
So what you're saying is that you're a judgy bitch and I am a gullible skeptic.
Yes, 100%. Paul, what about you? Where do you fall in this?
I didn't trust them at all. The first scene when they get on board and they say, oh, Dosto's here, and then their arms start flapping around and they look angry. And then they say, yeah. And then they're like, oh, we need to check on him. We're very worried about him. Like, oh, come on, guys. You didn't like what? You don't need to be a body language specialist to understand that they're lying to you here.
Yeah. Yeah, that was annoying. That was really annoying. I mean, of course, in the beginning, I was just like, these people, like, they're clearly talking. Why are they so quiet? I understand that Halen and Iris are, you know, skeptical, but there was just no action. So I had to brush it off because I was just really annoyed at those two. But no, we're talking about the Thanksgiving moment.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened under Aster's rule.
No. So. No.
She's gone, okay? Move on.
But, I mean, it's true, though. She would have been too hard to crack.
She would have left them out there, and they would have died, and it would have been awesome.
Right. She wouldn't have been, like, getting their duffel bags off the boat.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. But she is in the past. She's
oh, you only poor on the poster, dears. Guys. Welcome. Welcome aboard. No, that's all I got. That's all the Lena I can manifest for right now.
Anyway, okay, so hi, low, hi.
Hi, I enjoyed hearing about the universe that Aleph is out there crushing his enemies, and it's wild to the extent that he is doing so. In order to kill a few, he's killing a billion just to make sure
that
he's not missing anybody. Lo was, again, with some of the kind of the timing and pace of what was displayed, I just couldn't agree with how our heroes wound up tied up at the end, because I just couldn't understand their decisions getting there. And then the other high, well, I like Iris. I like to see more Iris. Like, I'm not exactly like her or anything like that, but I do seem to understand her more than anyone else on this show. So, like, when she took it personally that the Sabarans were messing up the station, and she goes and screams in the pillow. I'm not sure that I've screamed in a pillow anytime lately, but I understand the motivation. I get it. I sympathize with that emotion. So, yeah, that was my second high.
Okay. Well, I think one of my highs is Paul and I got to interview Ellen Wong recently. And so, because just kind of taking some context from our conversation there and applying it to the Iris to give me like a fuller picture of stuff, it was a lot of fun for me to be able to pair those things together. So it did make me enjoy Iris a lot. I've already identified a lot with Iris, and I have screamed in pillows plenty of times for these exact kind of things. Like, I have struggled with the, you know, things like deviating from what it's supposed to be. And I don't like holes. So my low is that I still have a lot of questions that have accumulated. I don't feel like I've gotten all of the answers that I need, but I'm also notorious for asking hundreds of questions and trying to make sense of it. So that's just like my autism getting in the way of me being present and going with the flow like Gabby's so expertly able to do. And then
that's my Pisces.
And then let's see, my other high has been that because my autism situation does make it very difficult for me to see things beyond a lot of the time, so I lack a lot of the creativity. So my high is this conversation again with you guys to kind of help inspire the creativity in me and add the curiosities, because it really did help me cope better through the episode.
Okay. So my first high was the folds explanation. I thought that was really fun. My low is that it took too long for dinner. Made me hungry. And finally, my next high is that Harmony saw something. You know, she's an AI and she's always talking about how she can't see shit. And so I was like, oh, cool. You see an artifact-like substance in the air. Good for you, Harmony.
Excellent.
Well, all right. Well, looking forward to the next episode, I would assume that our heroes get out of their binds in some way. I kind of think that the Sabarans are going to shove off. I think they'll undo Dosto. But I was favoring that idea of Dev going with them, but I really am attracted to that idea that Dev gets anchored to the beacon eventually. So Dev has to stick around for that to happen. But
I'm down to keep tracking what a Beacon 23 with Dev behind it is like. I'm good with that too.
And I am down to see our homegirl Iris stop screaming into pillows and start screaming at people or AIs or something, yeah. Someone else.
Think that would help things?
Yeah. Yeah, they need a leader. Look at this episode. Their whole situation went to shit because none of them could figure out who's the leader. And so the Sabari people were like, we're fucking leading, bitches. Little bitches.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why at the end I was on their team. And I am on their team right now because Iris, you know, I thought she would step up and she didn't. And in the scene that you guys really like where she was screaming in the pillow, I was like, come on, girl. Don't be a bitch. Get the fuck out there and do your fucking job. Get it together. We don't scream at pillows. That's what I said. I was really unhappy at that part. So I'm glad you guys liked it, though.
It just humanizes her. And she didn't necessarily know what she was getting into. She thought she was a person to be in solitary confines for, you know, months and years on end being a beacon keeper. Now she's having to manage these more complex situations, relationships and stuff that might just be out of her wheelhouse, out of her experience.
Yeah. You're right. That's something I don't relate with. I'm a act now, feel later person, and that's not by choice. So you guys are right.
All right. Well, this has been our coverage for episode 5 of the second season of Beacon 23. Its name was Song of Sorrow. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to it on iTunes or Spotify or Amazon or wherever you found it so other people can find it as well. Be sure to listen in the coming days and weeks as we start to roll out our interviews with Beacon 23 actors and crew members, such as, I think the first one will be William Marriott, the composer of the music. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.